Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Graduation ceremonies are happening as we speak on college campuses around the country. This as students continue to protest the war in Gaza. Today, Columbia University said it will cancel its main university-wide commencement. The University of Southern California yesterday sent in police to clear an encampment. And at DePaul University in Chicago, police held the line to separate demonstrators from counter-protesters. In all, more than 2,000 demonstrators have been arrested around the country. Now we want to step back to take a long view, bring some context to this. Stephen Mintz has studied student protests. He's history professor at the University of Texas at Austin, and he writes for Inside Higher Education. Professor Stephen, welcome to Here and Now.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Protests in this country, we know, go way back, at least to the Boston Tea Party. As far as student protests, many of us think about Berkeley, the University of California in the mid-1960s. It was called the Free Speech Movement. Before those demonstrations, student protests were prohibited.
Several thousand students have gathered for what has been billed as a victory celebration, a victory the students feel is assured. The first speaker, the leader of the Free Speech Movement, Mario Savio.
I'm confident that the students and the faculty, University of California, will exercise their freedom with the same responsibility they've shown in winning their freedom.
Did those protests back then succeed in certain ways?
Imagine an environment where it was illegal for a student to hand out a leaflet on campus. These were leaflets designed to recruit students to participate in the civil rights movement. And that was banned. Speaking to large groups of people on the Berkeley campus was banned. The goals of the free speech movement were very clear, and they were accomplishable. And that's essential if a movement is to succeed. Protesters in the free speech movement made it clear that all they were demanding were basic civil liberties that all of us take for granted.
In California, Ronald Reagan became governor in 1967, in part by casting these protesters as unruly and chaotic.
A small minority of beatniks, radicals, and filthy speech advocates have brought shame on a great university.
You write about Governor Reagan's response spurring a rise in conservatism for four decades. How did that happen?
There was an appeal to law and order that resonated widely. And then in the early 1970s, when the most radical groups appeared, the Weather Underground, the Symbionese Liberation Army, and others, this scared the living daylights out of the public.
And at the same time, we did see President Nixon end the draft. You know, over time, the U.S. government pulled out of a very unpopular war. Fair to say that during the Vietnam era, those protests achieved some of what they tried to achieve?
When protests have accomplishable goals and resonate with the public, then accommodation is not only possible, but it's encouraged. In the 1960s, all male students were eligible for the military draft. It gave a visceral meaning to protest. Protests of the 1960s had identifiable leaders, where today's protests don't. The demands in the 1960s were very concrete. It was especially important for groups to maintain message discipline. That is, they understood that how messages were interpreted by the media made a huge difference. Martin Luther King would call off protests if he thought the message that got across would be wrong. To be effective, protests must be strategic. They must have concrete goals.
I want to ask you about decisions by university administrators and how they've responded over time. If we go back to the 60s and 70s, do you look back and see patterns in these decisions, whether to allow protests, whether to crack down? Because that, of course, is a key question today.
There was no question in the early and mid-1960s that administrators overreacted. And the effect of that was to radicalize many students. Later in the decade, the administrators realized that the best path forward was either accommodation or, as some would put it, co-optation. And there were ways to accommodate students. Establish Black studies programs, establish women's studies programs. They created a new university environment, the university environment we live in now.
This weekend, the country marked another anniversary, the Kent State shootings, May 4th, 1970, when members of the Ohio National Guard fired live rounds into a crowd of students.
Leave this area immediately.
All of a sudden, I heard the shooting.
The guardsmen opened fire on the students.
67 shots.
They killed four people, nine others wounded, and it sparked a national outrage, led to the first general student strike in U.S. history at some 400 colleges and universities. How did that impact public perception about student activism, and how is that potentially relevant to what we're seeing now?
When the police tried to remove protesters at Columbia University a few days ago, an officer's gun went off. One can only imagine what would have happened had a bullet struck a police officer or a protester. The violence that took place at UCLA, if that were to expand around the country, one could imagine explosions on both sides of this issue. This is a very vulnerable moment. Things are likely to go badly if passions and rage remain so high. It's not strategic on anyone's part. I don't believe it does anyone any good, but it could lead to a catastrophe.
I want to ask you about the frequent student demand for universities to divest from Israel. Is there a lesson from the protests in the mid-1980s when students, of course, demanded their universities sell off their investments in South Africa and its apartheid government?
What do we want? An investment! When do we want it?
Tonight, protesters are getting ready for bed and perhaps a run-in with campus police.
At the University of Illinois, 60 students were arrested at a meeting of school trustees.
Anti-apartheid protests at the University of California, Berkeley campus have mobilized thousands of students this spring. Rallies in front of the administration building seemed a throwback to the free speech demonstrations of the 1960s.
In the end, many schools did pull their investments from South Africa. Congress followed suit with an anti-apartheid bill. Do you sense there is any scenario where the students today can have progress on that divestment front?
In the past, divestment succeeds when there is a rough consensus on a campus and often in society as a whole. That's why campuses in the Northeast and the Far West were able to divest from fossil fuels. That's why campuses in many parts of the country divested from gun manufacturers. On the issue of divesting from Israel, there is total disagreement. There is no consensus to appeal to. I can't imagine this taking place on a broad scale. Unless the protesters were able to reach out and convince others in the wisdom of their view, I think this is a non-starter.
You've written that in the current political climate, universities are vulnerable the shadow of a backlash is looming. What do you mean by that?
Universities today are in a very perilous condition. And it is not coming solely from the conservative right. In Massachusetts, there are legislators who are proposing a 2% tax on the endowments, private universities. In the case of Harvard, that would be $1 billion a year. Mm. There are calls on the left as well as on the right to eliminate universities' tax exemptions. There are calls to tax university property. If they were to lose public political support, if they were subject to taxation along these lines, these institutions would not be able to function effectively.
Stephen Mintz is author and history professor at the University of Texas, Austin. He's written about the history of student protests, and he also writes for Inside Higher Education. Thanks so much for joining us, Stephen.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.